This podcast is sponsored in part by Benjamin Hart.
That's me!
And yours truly, Zach Arnold.
And by participation from listeners like you. So let's tune in to another episode of...
IPC.
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 The Intergalactic Peace Coalition Podcast.
All the galaxies.
All for you.
It is technically still February, and we are most definitely still here on the Intergalactic Peace Coalition Podcast. Broadcasting live on Zach Arnold Productions and coming to you wherever podcatchers can be caught. I'm Zach Arnold, and I am back for the 370th episode of IPC, not including bonus episodes and crossover episodes and all the other good stuff that we have done along the way. And I think what's really fun about this particular episode is that there's no agenda. We're just hopping on to shoot the breeze and get caught up about life, and we'll do that for however long the wind may take us. When I'm talking about breezes, the wind may take us, that sort of thing. Yes, it's going to be that type of a night. But when I say we, obviously, I'm not going to be talking to myself all evening. Back for more fun again, it is Mr. Ben Hart. Dude, how have you been?
I am doing good. Good. I'm just going to go with good, okay? All right,
okay,
I'm trying to be closer. You know, you always go with, I'm going great, I'm going fantastic. I'm going closer to the honest answer, which is good, okay? I'm good. I'm not going to go with the other answer, which is I'm still above the grass. You know, that old thing.
One of my bosses, his favorite phrase is I'm still vertical.
That's true, because there's so many, because like there are fates worse than death nowadays. It's not just bad to be alive. It's good to be up and standing and alive and living your life. And that's what I'm doing. OK, I don't have anything to complain about right now. I could complain plenty, other than the fact that, look, I'm looking on my calendar right now. It says February 28th. And being that this is a leap year, we still got one more day. So we're still well into February, okay? Might even actually get this episode out on podcatchers by the end of February. Who knows? But it still counts, okay? I'm sorry. We should have got this episode out sooner. But it is the shortest month of the year, so you got to give us at least a little bit of credit there. So, we don't really have any super laid out topics tonight. Kind of just going to go with the flow. See what happens. Got a few ideas. Got a few things we've watched. A few things we've experienced. And we'll just see where it goes.
Well, as always, on this new format that we've got here on the program, one of the things that we like to do, sometimes it takes us 4 minutes, like today, and other times it takes us a half an hour to get to. It just depends on how we're feeling. But we've got my lovely wife's Edna's icebreaker segment that we're going to get to. And Steven asks, what did I miss in the first 4 minutes? Literally nothing. For once, it was just intros. So
yeah, weird.
Welcome to the chat. Welcome to the fun. I see a heart from our friend Dan Grievous, who's also tuning in all the way from across the pond. I want to say Bulgaria.
Bulgaria. You got it. You nailed it.
I was really worried.
Unless he moved last time. That was where he was the last time I spoke to him. So.
Even says hour-long icebreaker. Hell yeah, let's go.
Don't tempt us.
I don't think it's going to be quite that long. And I feel like we may have had a similar conversation at one point that may have just been a whimsical, you know, off the cuff type of conversation. But now we can take a few minutes to dive a little bit deeper into this concept. The Edna's icebreaker question is, if you were a superhero, and people in the chat, you can join us too. If you're listening after the fact, then find us on social media. Or if you're my brother, you can send me a text at 11:13 in the evening when I'm about to go to bed. You know, whatever floats your boat. if you were a superhero, what would your superpowers be and why?
I think because there's so many different superpowers, and obviously, like, there's so many superheroes have powers that are used to for fighting and stuff like that, like super strength and flying and stuff like that, and like those would come in handy. I feel like no matter what superpower I had, like it would be useful. But I'm like thinking practically. I'm just like, okay, probably as a general superhero thing, I would probably fall into a life of crime fighting, because that's what you do as a superhero. With great power comes great responsibility, as an old man once said. So, yeah, that's a part of it. But also, I want practicality. I want something I can use in my everyday life and actually make my life easier. And, like, I'm thinking some sort of teleportation. I think anything that could make sure that I could just get from one place to the next in a blink of an eye. And that this could also include just being a speedster, being someone who has incredible speed. So that, yeah, if I roll out of bed, 5 minutes before I'm supposed to be at work, I could still get there on time. Right. That would be nice. And I think it would be a very useful thing. And also just general, just like if I want to travel, I could just go. I am eagerly awaiting teleportation to be invented in the real world. Okay. I'm still holding out hope. But in the meantime, if I was a superhero, yeah, teleport me.
Yeah, I think that's one that often gets overlooked, just because stuff like strength and x-ray vision and speed are all the common answers. And especially in your sense, living in Mississippi and all the cool stuff happening like in New York and Florida and California and Dallas, hint, hint. It makes perfect sense to, you know, be able to, you know, just squint your eyes and when you open them, boom, there you are at Comic-Con or something. You know what I mean? Like,
oh yeah,
that would be really, really cool. And now that I'm thinking about it logistically, like that saves on flight costs. Like you don't have to like try to plan a vacation around a destination. You can just hop there, experience it for the day, and then hop back home. Like, and if you really, really enjoyed it and you didn't feel like you got to see all of it, then, you know, just go back and do it again the next day or go back next week or whatever. Like, that makes a lot of sense. But I think mine is a little more abstract, and I don't know if this counts as a superpower, but I'm going to say that it does. I have really developed a deep appreciation, and I'm not going to say affinity, and I'm not going to say that, like, I've developed a great fluency, but I've developed a great appreciation for linguistics. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it has to do with my in-laws speak primarily Spanish. And I've had to reacquaint myself with the language just to be able to understand where the conversation is leading sometimes. And it makes me think about how complex a language like Russian might be, or how complex a language like Mandarin might be, or how many hundreds or thousands of dialects of a language in Africa there must be based on what village you go to. They may have a different term for for everything. And so I think if I was going to pick a superpower, I would want the ability to instantly understand and speak any language I hear.
That's a really cool power.
Because then I'd be able to know if people at the Thai food restaurant are talking crap about me when I'm ordering my food. I would be able to, bridge a language barrier and negotiate things. Or I would be able to speak to somebody in their native tongue so that it doesn't sound like I'm talking down to them, but I'm actually, you know, conversing with them the way they know how to converse best. So I think it would be a respect type of thing, but I also think that it would really bring people together if a human was able to do all those things instead of trying to get a computer or an AI program to do the universal translations.
Yes, and I think, I mean, obviously that's a great thing for going out in the world we talked about this. What was the last time we were talking about, you know, going to other countries, learning about, you know, having to learn the language and, you know, getting around like that. It can be a huge help to know the language, be able to read everything and talk to people and stuff like that. I'm also thinking of extenuating circumstances. You know, what if aliens show up? You would be the guy that they would go to translate everything and bring about galactic peace.
Yes. And see, that's the thing is, I didn't say all the languages of the world. I said any language that I come in contact with. Because I wanted that addendum in there. I remember watching Star Trek Enterprise. I know that it gets panned horribly for somewhat justified reasons. Other times I feel like they're unjustified. But there's a character in there whose name is Hoshi Sato. And she's the communications officer on the ship because she speaks 17 Earth languages. I think it's 17. And she has to try to figure out the linguistics and the grammar structure and the vocabulary of completely alien languages and do it on the fly. Because in those early days of Starfleet, they don't have universal translators. She was the one who was developing the universal translator program that you end up coming to appreciate in stuff like Star Trek The Next Generation. She was the frontier person for that. And so to be able to converse with anybody at any given time just sounds like it would be such a cool thing to be able to do. But I also feel like at times it would be overwhelming because, you know, when you're going down someplace like, I want to say Times Square or Hollywood Boulevard or someplace like that, there's got to be two dozen different languages being spoken all at the same time. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And so in that sense, I feel like it could also be really overstimulating and overwhelming trying to pick up on and understand and interpret all of those in your head all at once.
Especially when you live in a big city, that's you experiencing so many different cultures and languages packaged together in a very tight package. You know, that would come in handy with so many things. I think that's definitely communication and travel. Two big things that are essential to life.
Yep. And it's kind of funny that somebody who is as well traveled as you've been to all states but one, correct?
Correct.
So somebody as well traveled as you would want to keep traveling. And the communications major, myself, would want more communications. So I think it's very appropriate for the two of us.
It just fits right in, doesn't it?
Grievous in the chat, the power of flight so that I could see more of the world, or ice manipulation because I love low temperatures and Iceman is my favorite X-Man. Okay, on that note, there's a couple of things in there that are very much worth discussing. I too would like to see more of the world, Dan, but then ice manipulation sounds a lot like water bending, does it not, Ben?
I would say so.
I believe I haven't seen the Netflix version yet, but I believe there's a scene in the animated Avatar: The Last Airbender where ice pricks get thrown around by waterbenders like spears almost. And let's be honest, icicles and that type of thing can be pretty deadly. So waterbending is definitely a thing. And I want to ask you, I kind of gave it away. Have you seen anything of the new Avatar on Netflix or any clips or screenshots or, you know, what's your exposure to that show been in the first few days here?
Yeah, I have not, because I knew it was coming up. Obviously, it's been the talk of the town, the talk of the internet, and it's been everywhere. I've heard a lot of ranging opinions on it, obviously, because it's the internet. And I did want to get in on the action. I've been very busy, haven't had time to really get into it. I shamefully have still not seen the original series in full, not finished it yet. I really do want to, and that was kind of what was holding me back of just like, how do I get into this? You know, do I just dive right into the live action series and just experience that for all it's worth Am I missing something if I go back, unless if I just miss out on the animation series? Should I catch up on the animated series before jumping into the live action series? It's a big question. Probably not the only person asking this, but ultimately I haven't had time to watch either one of them really, unfortunately. So that kind of answered the question for me, but I want to, at some point, I'm sure I'll just like, okay, I'm just going to sit down. I'm going to start with the old series, continue through it, get through to the new series, because you know, it does look amazing. I mean, my experience, my exposure so far is it looks great. And, you know, it looks like a show that they've put a lot of money into it. I think that's one of the problems with doing these fantasy shows we've seen with a lot of superhero and Star Wars, whatever else. It's like sometimes it looks great, sometimes it doesn't. That budget really shows in the TV space, and it sucks when it doesn't quite land. But it looks like not a faithful adaption, but an adaption that is worthy of the source material.
Well, I'm kind of right in the middle as far as what my perception on it has been. I have not seen the episodes yet. I probably will have seen them by the time the next episode we record comes out. Mm-hmm. What my wife and I are doing is we are watching season one. Because that's basically what this first series on Netflix is going to be based on. And so we've only got like 3 or 4 episodes left, and then we're going to watch the live action. And there may be a few disconnects, there may be a little bit of continuity that's you know, haphazard here and there. But I think watching the first season will get at least a good foundation of who the different characters are and what to expect from their mannerisms, and you know, to see what kind of things they include and what kind of things they don't include, because there's like 20, 21 episodes in this first season, and the live action only has like 8 episodes. So there's stories that are getting eliminated. There's stories that are getting condensed. There's stories that are getting combined into other storylines put into one episode. So there's a lot going on, and I kind of want to see it through both lenses, if at all possible. And so that's kind of where we're at. We're 3 or 4 episodes away from finishing season one, and then we'll make the switch.
Yeah, I totally get that. And it, you know, it has been somewhat disappointing to see so much mixed opinions online, but I feel like I'm not to say like I haven't seen it. I can't speak to the quality of it. I know a lot of people are like, this is great. And then other people are like, this is not what I wanted. And like, I think all opinions are mostly valid. I think ultimately this thing is so beloved, and it's like, there's the whole debate about like, should they even do an adaption? Like, you know, this whole thing about just like,
right,
the animation is a valid thing. You don't need to adapt it into live action. But then I understand like, these studios, they got to make money, and they're going to do this, and you can't stop them. So you may as well just embrace it. But ultimately, it's so beloved, I think, you know, and you're not doing a sequel. You're doing a remake. You're remaking this thing in a different way. And when it's like considered to be one of the most perfect, the best animated series of all time, when you start changing it, you're going to piss people off. And that's just how it is, unfortunately. So it does suck, but I think the reaction, I guess, is probably par for the course, unfortunately.
Well, I'm with you that a lot of my feed is all over the place, because I belong to a Facebook group that has like 500,000 people in it. That's called the Order of the White Lotus.
Oh, wow.
And it's all fans of Avatar The Last Airbender doing posts and discussions and memes, and it's a really fun group. But their reactions are all over the place. Some people really, really love it. And then some people, like Discussing Film, give it literally a 1 out of 10. I'm pretty sure Discussing Film gave it a 1 out of 10. And then Rotten Tomatoes kind of balances it all out and gives it like a score of 60 or something like that. So like, there's some that are very mid reviews, and then some that are just either end of the spectrum. It's a 10 out of 10 or it's a 1 out of 10. So I'm like, I don't know what to expect anymore. But Dan Grievous makes a good point in the chat saying that people forget how bad TV adaptations used to be. This is very true. They used to be god-awful, unwatchable. I think this is definitely a watchable series, even if it's not completely faithful to the source material. My question is, just how faithful do they try to be? Because there was a lot of drama around Michael Dante DiMartino and some of the other execs from the original series that dropped out of the project because like they felt like they lost the vision. They lost what the essence of the show was supposed to be. And so they still have writing credits and executive producer credits on certain episodes. But they almost do it out of obligation, not because they were actually on set and there for the recordings and stuff. So,
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, it's just a messy thing because you're ultimately they're doing something that didn't have to be done. Like I said, the thing was fine the way it was, but we're going to because it's fun, because one thing I'm not totally against the idea of live action remakes and stuff like this. I get the not just the monetary but the value in it. I just remakes in general. I'm just like, remake can, whether it's good or bad, can still like draw attention to the property. It can draw attention to the story. It can make people go back and watch the original thing. And this will it will drive traffic back to those things. And ultimately it will bring attention to this thing and bring in more fans. But it's also going to bring in more attention, contention, because a certain group of fans are going to be like people that are watching this that are like me that have never seen anything. And are going to go, oh, well, I'll watch this Avatar thing. Mm-hmm. And they might love it because they're not going to bring in all the baggage. People don't want to admit it, but they do. As a Star Wars fan, I'm bringing an immense amount of baggage every time I watch a new Star Wars thing because mm-hmm. I have so much love for this. I can't be objective. I can't be subjective. I can't just watch this and go like, oh, that was fine. You know, I have to judge it based on what I think Star Wars is, whatever I think. If you're a massive Avatar fan, it's going to be the same way. And there's mm-hmm. nothing wrong with that, but you have to come to terms with that and go like, okay, this is a thing. Maybe it's not for me. Maybe it's for the new audience. Maybe it's to get people in. And if that's the case, that's great. If it brings new people in and they discover the animated series because they watch the live action show, then that's a win.
Yes. Yeah. And what's interesting is I don't know if the animated series is still on Netflix, because I found it on Paramount Plus. So
that sounds a lot of stuff been excommunicated to Paramount Plus recently.
Well, but what's interesting is if people want to watch it, they are going to have to get it on another platform. So not only is that going to drive traffic to another series, but it's going to drive traffic to a competitor, which is a very interesting dynamic the way all of that plays out these days.
Yeah, that's interesting. I bet Netflix it was so much easier when everything was on Netflix. I'm not sticking up for Netflix, but there was that time when like you could go on things. It's like, oh yeah, you could go watch Stranger Things and Daredevil and the Clone Wars. And it was all just on Netflix. There was no competitors.
It was all there. Yeah, it was Netflix or Hulu, and most of the time people chose Netflix because it was commercial free.
Now they've all got commercials.
Now they've all got them. Now you got to have Disney Plus, and now you got to have Paramount Plus, and now you got to have Peacock Plus. No, that's not a thing. Hulu Plus.
Like, they really got to come up with better names for these things. Just taking your name and adding Plus to it, that's not a streaming service name. I'm sorry. It's just not.
AMC Plus, HBO. Well, at least HBO tried to do Max, and then they dropped the HBO and just called themselves Max.
No, it's just Max.
And now I just keep waiting for like the Grinch's dog to become the face of the icon or something, because it's just Max. But
or they have to come up with some kind of like a mascot, like Gritty or something like that, like just a weird ass mascot for Max. Somebody named Max.
Max Greenfield from New Girl.
There you go. That's we're just coming up with ideas. Come up with all the characters that are called Max, and they're like Paramount Plus. They've got some great commercials. Like, have you seen those things where it's like Captain Pike and SpongeBob and Picard, and they're all just on a mountain just doing random crap?
Oh, like the Hey Arnold thing with Creed.
Yeah,
I have seen that. And then on the flip side, it's the same VD commercial on Peacock every episode.
It's seeing commercials everywhere. I'll turn on the TV. I don't even have cable, but I'll turn on like the wire TV, and you know it's the same stupid Burger King commercial with that stupid jingle that's been stuck in my head all day. It's bad. And then I go open YouTube, it's the same commercial. Disney Plus, same thing.
Okay. Real talk though, Peacock is like really heavily promoting this thing that they're doing called the Office Superfan episodes. Have you heard about this?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Well, you know what The Office is.
I mean, yeah.
Obviously. Like, that's a given. So most of the time, in order to fit network schedules, The Office would shoot anywhere from 30 to 40, 45 minutes of material, and then they'd have to trim it to like 21, 30 in order to fit commercial breaks and stuff for the network. But there's a lot of material that's been shot that is like – quality that is ready to be part of something, and NBC has hired editors to go back through that footage and create extended edition episodes of The Office using that old footage and deleted scenes.
Wow, that's crazy.
They have like a whole other section on Peacock that's called the Superfan episodes. And instead of getting the regular network 21 minutes and 30 seconds, you'll get like a full 32-minute episode with all the extended features and scenes and deleted cuts and everything. It's like all of the stuff. If you're an Office fan, you've got to watch the Superfan stuff because there's so much extra content that sometimes doesn't make it in.
That's a great idea because like look, I've been waiting like 25 years for all the deleted scenes from The Phantom Menace to be released. Like, mm-hmm. There's supposed to be like an 8-hour cut of that movie. I'd never seen it. Like, you know, like taking these and like you have footage, you don't have to. And like, it doesn't cost the studio anything. It's just footage there. It's just like hire someone to edit it. And mm-hmm. it's free content. And like, you know, that's an amazing idea, really.
Yeah. And I really, really hope that they'll do it for other shows, too. Like, I think they could do it for Parks and Rec. Afterwards, like I'm sure Parks and Rec has material that they could do that for. So
it's amazing that they've held on because like The Office is a newer show, like it's newer than Seinfeld and Friends, but it's still an older show. It's amazing that they've managed to hang on to all that extra footage. Like you're just talking about like
mm-hmm.
there's episodes of Doctor Who that are lost because they're 60 plus years old and right. they've been broadcast and they didn't record them sometimes. They just mm-hmm. the recording get lost. Like that stuff happens. Yeah. Now to have like not only the episodes, but oh, here's all the B-roll footage,
mm-hmm.
the original probably unedited footage of this that is just there. That's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really cool. And so Peacock will do these commercials telling you to go watch the new season of the Office Superfan episodes. And I guess the season that they're finally on is when Michael departs the show.
Mm.
And so they're like, 180 new minutes of Michael's last season. And like, it's stuck in my head now.
Oh, my God.
Because like they sing it just like the version of the song when they're saying goodbye to Steve Carell on the show. And
oh, wow.
So the jingle is like, remember to watch season 7. And like, I caught myself singing it at work today. And I was like, I guess I need to remember to watch season 7.
And here I am like, man, I don't really want one, but I kind of need a Whopper because they keep advertising the stupid Whopper on those stupid things, that stupid jingle that's stuck in my head.
Mm-hmm. Yep. At the BK, have it your way.
Okay, okay, that's enough. That's enough. I've heard enough. No, please, spare me.
Low-key, though, I feel like the only decent thing on their menu is the chicken fries, but that's a hot take.
Chicken's not bad. The chicken's not bad. Usually that's my thing to go to a burger place like that and get chicken. Because
dude, yeah. I've had their bacon burgers, I've had their Whoppers, I've had their wraps that they just recently unfurled. Like, believe me, when I need something quick and easy while I'm driving around, I'll try different fast food places. And I've tried Burger King plenty of times and never found the right thing to to convince me to stick with it other than the chicken fries. I'll get a 12-piece chicken fries, just the fries sometimes.
But that's good.
But that's like pretty much the only thing I find tolerable on their menu anymore.
I tell you what, the rodeo burger ain't bad.
Rodeo burger.
Actually, I should save this for barbecue watch, but I won't. It's because I'll forget about it. It's a just a little burger with barbecue sauce and maybe bacon and a onion ring on it.
Oh, okay. I feel like I've had something similar at other places before. Onion rings and fried onion pieces are a pretty common staple with those types of barbecue burgers.
Yeah,
and they're pretty good. I like the added crunch that they provide.
Yeah, I get the Western Bacon Barbecue Burger at Steak and Shake, and that has grilled onions and fried onions on it, and it's incredible.
Dude, have you had the Frisco Melt?
I think I may have tried it once. Dude, sounds good.
The Frisco Melt, I have no idea what's in the sauce, but it's like a patty melt on steroids.
I tell you what, the patty melted Whataburger is amazing. Oh,
dude, there's literally nothing else worth getting. Well, maybe the sweet and spicy bacon burger. And they've got wings now. And their breakfast menu is pretty good.
I've
okay,
tried
yeah, there's
two
more
flavors of the wings, and I'm like, okay, all right.
Well, it's basically just the Wada Chicken minis that are tossed in different sauces that they've got around there anyways.
Like, I will say,
they've got
buffalo
sauce. They've already got sweet and spicy sauce. They've already got honey butter sauce. So you just toss a couple of chicken nuggets in there and then put it in a bowl.
Yeah, I appreciate that the wings are boneless, quote unquote boneless. They're just chicken fingers.
They're chicken nuggets.
They're chicken nuggets. But like, I appreciate that because like, my food hot take is that wings suck. Wings are terrible, and they're not worth the effort. There's just like you get this little teeny tiny bone and you pick up a little bit of chicken off of it and it's just nothing to it. I'm just like, give me a big piece of chicken. I'm a big boy. I can handle it. I hate wings and I avoid it at all costs. But then they got the boneless wings. Okay, I could at least tolerate that. I'm not crazy about some of the flavors, but at least it's all chicken.
This is true. And I think that's why I prefer flats over drums, because I don't feel like I get very much meat from eating the little mini drums when you order wings. But I have figured out how to maximize your bite when you're having a flat. So I just gravitate towards flats whenever somebody has wings. And that usually does it for me. But I'm with you. There's usually a lot of finger mess and there's a lot of consumption that has to be done. Like, I don't feel full until I've had like 10 wings minimum. And then it makes me feel like a fat ass for eating all that food.
And they're so like, messy. You can't, they gotta, if they got a sauce on it, then game over. You're going through 10 napkins in one wing.
Yeah. Yeah. You end up looking like, what is it? Jack Horner from Puss in Boots, where he's just got stuff on his fingers all the time.
God.
Yeah. Burger King is pretty much a convenience thing for me, says Steven. There was an RIP that happened in here. Speaking of sitcoms, we were talking about The Office. Steven says RIP to Richard Lewis, who's been on Curb.
Yeah, that broke today, didn't it?
It did come out today at the time of our recording. And, you know, I haven't seen Robin Hood Men in Tights in years. I do remember it vaguely, but I don't remember his part in it, unfortunately. And I keep meaning to get around to Curb Your Enthusiasm, but I just haven't. But obviously, it's never fun news when you hear of somebody's passing. So I wish I could do a better tribute to him, but I do wish his loved ones and his family the best, because I know that must be a really difficult thing to be going through.
Yeah. Yeah, it always hits hard with the whole losing, especially celebrities, because so many people are so people have connections to them.
Dude, Carl Weathers was a blow.
Huge blow.
I didn't even know the man was sick. Like,
it came out of nowhere. Like, he was just like, he's been doing conventions and filming stuff and all. He's been everywhere.
And then who was it? Andre Brower. Andre Brower from
that was awful too.
From Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Among other things, but I knew him from Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Like to lose a couple of icons like that so suddenly is just is so wild to me. That is one show that we have been watching a lot of lately is Brooklyn Nine-Nine. If we're gonna get into the what have you been watching segment.
Yeah.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine has been something that we've been watching pretty regularly lately. And then we were watching Avatar The Last Airbender. We kind of took a little bit of a break. I've got baseball games this weekend, so we'll probably pick it up like at the end of the week or next week or something. But I love Andre Brower in in Brooklyn Nine-Nine. His portrayal as Captain Holt and his interactions with everybody in the show is just so phenomenal. And he's a talent that's definitely going to be missed as well.
Yeah. I mean, even if you're like, I've never really watched a full episode of Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which I feel terrible about because like I've seen so many clips that are just hilarious. And so many of them,
amazing.
He's in them. Like there's a recent one where obviously people meme these things and they take context and things. It's like, you know, with the context of the meme was, you catch your cats fighting. It could apply to any animal, obviously, but like you catch your cats fighting or hissing at each other. And it's Andre Brower just saw Captain Holt going like, now you've done it. You made me turn my chair.
Yes.
So yeah, there's so many one-liners. It's so good.
And when the news broke that he passed away, they took the clip of him from the finale, I believe, talking to Andy Samberg. And he's like, if I had a son and he turned out like you, I would have been very proud. And it just broke me, man. I was like, oh, my God, like the bond that those two must have had over the course of that show must have just been unreal. And so I know that we're straying from Richard Lewis, who most recently passed away. But there's been a slew of celebrity passings recently. And I would be remiss if we didn't pay our respects to all of them.
Yeah, there's just a lot happens in a month or so. And yeah, I know I've seen and see. I know I'm wrecking my brain because like I knew Richard Lewis. I'm trying to think of like what I've actually seen him in, because he's just there's so many actors that are like, I don't really remember a movie. I just know I know of them. I know that they're just had a tremendous presence.
Let me see. Nope, I don't want this advertisement to live like a gigillionaire. Thank you.
Oh boy.
He's been on a lot of different things. He's been in various TV shows. It's like one episode here, one episode there, three episodes here. He was in 41 episodes of Curb Your Enthusiasm though, so he was pretty regular.
Wow,
there.
Major player in that show. Jeez.
Yeah. He was also on BoJack Horseman. He was also on The Cleaner. He was on Law and Order SVU. He was on Everybody Hates Chris. He was on The Simpsons. He was on George Lopez. He was on 9 episodes of Seventh Heaven. He was on 2 and a Half Men. He was on Alias. He was in the TV series of Hercules. He wasn't in the movie Hercules, but he was in the TV series. I'm trying to see, like, is there anything else that maybe I might know him from? 13 episodes of the 1993 series Daddy Dearest.
Wow.
The Wrong Guys, Riptide. His very first appearance was a TV movie in 79 called Diary of a Young Comic. So he's been around, but he also has a reputation as a stand-up comedian, so he probably was on tours for a lot of those types of things as well. So it's very possible that some of his stand-up may have made his way across our TikTok page or something at some point as well.
That's also true. I get a ton of that on a daily basis.
Man, I get a lot of comedians and I get a lot of dog videos, like a lot of those trying to observe animal behaviors and seeing how like different dominant versus submissive dogs play off of each other and stuff. And it's fascinating to see like what their type of communication looks like amongst each other, as opposed to the way that they communicate with humans.
Yeah.
It's just also kind of weird that that's what shows up in my TikTok feed.
Like, and now that you've talked about it in public, you're going to get even more of it.
I probably will, but I've mentioned it to all of you all now, so it'll probably end up in your algorithms and in your feeds as well.
So you're welcome.
It was all part of the plan.
Mm-hmm. My dastardly plan to screw with your algorithms.
Those are a couple of the things that I've been watching lately. Anything in particular that is worth noting that you've been watching?
I was racking my brain. There was one obvious one that I do want to talk a little bit about. I think maybe I talked about it last time because it's been an ongoing thing. But I'll mention the more obscure one that I forgot about. It's been a few weeks since I actually saw it. But of note, because it's something that I've heard about literally all my life, The Princess Bride is a movie.
Oh, you finally got around to that, did you?
Finally got around to it. It's on Disney Plus. It was very easy to get a hold of, and we're looking for a movie to watch one night. Like, yeah, okay, well, we'll give this a shot. And it was a fun movie. It's a fun movie. You know, it was basically the movie just became me either physically or mentally doing the Leonardo DiCaprio pointing meme the entire time, going like, oh, it's that meme. It's that meme. Like every 2 minutes, it was another meme, you know. This the whole thing of, you seem like a nice fellow, I'd hate to kill you. Oh, you seem like a nice fellow, I'd like not to die. Like, there's so, the movie is so quotable, and I feel like I'd already seen the movie, even though I've never seen the movie, but because there's just so many memes.
One of my favorites is where he's talking about how he's waiting around to kill him, and then as he's scaling the wall, he's like, well, that would put a damper on our relationship.
That's how, I mean, that movie's brilliant, just the fact of just like putting that thing, the dramatic coat of, oh, they're in this situation and he's going to wait and kill this guy. But then just like putting it in literal terms of just like, yeah, I'm just sitting here waiting to kill you. And we're going to have a conversation about it. We're going to talk about how ridiculous this is. We're going to point it out. It's great.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I think the other thing about that movie, and it's weird because I think that humor is very much up my alley, and I got my sense of humor from my parents.
Mm-hmm.
Parents hate that movie.
They hate it?
Yeah, my mom can't stand it. She's basically forbidden it in her house.
Wow.
She's like, I cannot take it. I cannot stand it. It is just too ridiculous. It's too out there. And this coming from a woman who watches a musical about a man who owns alligators.
It is weird how that goes when your film tastes, like, you get so much of your taste in movies, music, everything from your parents, and then when it starts, like when you start growing up and it really starts to diverge, and you're just like, what, this thing, just things like, you know, I love Marvel movies, and that's some things, and I watched a bunch of them with my parents, and it really just didn't catch on. They just weren't
right.
Like, they kind of enjoyed some of them, and they kind of didn't really get a lot of them, and I was just like, I just need to let this go. Like, it's just there. We're on different wavelengths here, and it's just not going to matter. And it sucks because your whole thing is just like, that's the one thing you want to do. Is like, I want to share this with you. This is great. And you're going to enjoy this as much. Thing. See that one moment, that one quote, you're going to get this. And just sometimes it just doesn't make that connection, which sucks. So,
yeah,
I totally feel you there.
Yeah. Yeah. We actually, we thought about watching it for Valentine's, my wife and I. Oh. And then I think we ended up watching an Adam Sandler movie instead.
We have to do that thing too,
where it's like we show things to each other, but then at the same time we also have to find like what the happy medium is that we can both enjoy. And apparently Sandler films are kind of like that happy medium between like what early 2000s goofy was versus, you know, like a pretty heartfelt movie with a decent message type of thing. Like, I don't know. There's just something about 51st Dates that I actually enjoy. It's probably one of the only rom-coms that I actually enjoy. And we've got Adam Sandler to thank for that.
Yeah, so. There's a lot of weirdly a lot of rom-coms of that era that are really classics, especially with Adam Sandler in them.
Yep.
Speaking of something that is not necessarily romantic of that sort, but
just
something
shifting
that is
gears.
Just,
not
look, I'm trying.
Not romantic, not comedy. Speaking of it in absolutely no way, shape, or form, have you been watching this?
That's about what it is. It's the best I could do with a segue, okay? Because this is something that's near and dear to my heart, near and dear to all our hearts. We've talked about it on this podcast. But the thing is the last time I watched this thing was probably when we talked about it in this podcast, when it first came out years ago. So it's my first time going in this. So I've talked about this in another podcast. I'm pretty sure I may have talked about this back on when things – I know I talked a few years ago because I kind of started – maybe 2 years ago, I decided, hey, okay, now I'm finally going to rewatch Daredevil. I'm finally going to go back because it's been a while. I really want to revisit that whole thing. So I watched the first season and part of season two, and I fell off for like two and a half years.
Oh, man.
And then recently, all the news, and we talk about it in our group chat with Jake. A lot of things, all the leaks and all the news regarding Daredevil Born Again. And then obviously I talked to someone about this. I'm now remembering we talked about Echo. That was a big thing. Echo was bringing Daredevil back. And that's what really kind of thrust me back in. Okay, now I'm going to finish this. So went back, started where I left off, went finished season two. I get through the season two. I'm like, well, The Defenders is there. I haven't watched that in a while. I'm really quite enjoying that. So I watched The Defenders again. And now I am almost done with Daredevil season three. And man, it's been a ride because the reason it's notable, not just because I'm enjoying it because I haven't seen it in a while, is there's so many things that I've forgotten. There's so much stuff that's happened. Daredevil season three is one of the best seasons of television I've ever seen. Like, it's so good. It's
so good.
And I forgot how great it is. And there's so many things I completely forgot. There's so many episodes I completely forgot. Like, this happened and this happened. Like, I remember the basic structure. I know where it ends up. I know what happens. But there's so many little things and I'm like, I don't recall this. And now, you know, I'm towards the end of season two and there's the whole sequence in the church and, you know, all that happens there. And it's getting down to the penultimate episodes and, you know, blood is on the walls. Like it's getting wild. Mm-hmm. And it's such a great season. And it's also obviously hyping me up for Daredevil Born Again, which is coming out apparently later this year, or early next. So ultimately, all that is to say is that I have been enjoying the heck out of this, and it's weird because I looked it up, like Daredevil season 3 came out in 2018. It feels like that was so much longer ago than that. Like 2018 to me feels like just around the corner. And like that was the year that Last Jedi came out. Like that's something that like, oh yeah, that wasn't that long ago. And then I'm thinking about watching Daredevil. I'm like, it feels like I haven't seen this in two decades. Like it's crazy. But yeah, it's been great. So now I'm like, okay, I got to do this more often. I'm still going to go back and try to finish Doctor Who. So that's on the plate. I have to figure out something else that I need to not just watch something I've never seen before, but rewatch something because, you know, I just forget some stuff, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I've definitely forgotten a lot of the plots from the Netflix Defenders shows. I remember like certain concepts and I remember like certain pacing concerns and character development concerns and things like that, but like certain action sequences and certain plot points and things like that have kind of passed me by because I've watched other things since then. And so I think a rewatch is probably in my future as well. Let me see. Steven in the chat. I thought about rewatching X-Men 92, but several episodes in, it's really showing its age and how it was made and structured. So I'm going to let 97 wash over me when it releases. Even having 92 on in the background feels a bit much when I can just put on King of the Hill instead. Now there's a show for the background, King of the freaking Hill.
Oh my God.
That was Bob's Burgers before Bob's Burgers existed.
It really was. I mean, that was big time back in the day and really changed the game in regards to animation. And
what's really funny is the guy who created King of the Hill is the guy who was the showrunner for The Office.
That's crazy. That really is crazy.
Those are just two completely different shows and even different formats. And yet, Greg Daniels, just a fantastic showrunner. He is a game changer in the industry. I need to get back and watch his Amazon series Upload, because that one is also a bit of a game changer too.
Yeah, I'd imagine.
I've told you about that show before, haven't I?
I think so. I'm aware of it because I know. I think doesn't it? One of the stars is Robbie Amell.
It is.
Yeah.
Robbie Amell, and he dies unexpectedly, and his girlfriend pays for his consciousness to get uploaded into this cloud space that is like really bougie. It's like some sort of a wooded retreat type of place. But then there are like certain people who can't afford to pay for the really big cloud space with their consciousness, and they live like in these bare bone structures with like bare minimum, like a cot and like nothing on the walls and like a rocking chair and like a book, and you only get like 10 gigs of data a month, so you only get like 10 pages or, you know, two chapters into a book every month as you're going through your life, and it's a really sad contrast. But it's also really plausible to see that like the really affluent could upload their consciousness and never think twice about it. And then there's like the free plans for people to try to keep their loved ones alive, or the really inexpensive plans to try to keep them alive. And you have to look at it and wonder, is it really living? So wasn't expecting to talk about that tonight, but I got to mention
it
anyway.
It's free for all, whatever comes to mind.
Speaking of which, since it's a free for all, I want to bring this up really quickly. We actually made the news, sort of.
I heard about this.
We made a listicle. We actually made it onto a listicle from a group called FeedSpot. They sent us an email, and I was actually purging out the spam emails that we've gotten from one particular follower who will not shut the hell up about sending us emails like 50 times a day.
You know who you are.
I was just cleaning out those spam emails that are completely unwanted, by the way. We had to create a whole new email that we're not going to tell you what it is, just because you basically burned that one to the ground. So
my personal
you.
Email will never be online again. Thank you very much.
Never going public. I've thought about it. I've thought about like, oh, hey, if you want to reach out to me, send me an email, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh, no, because that person's going to send me an email. So, yeah. Anyways, we made it onto a listicle from FeedSpot talking about the 30 best peace podcasts you must follow in 2024.
Well, I mean, we fit the bill.
Peace podcasts. I didn't even know that was a thing. Like true crime podcasts and television recap podcasts, like, you know, comedy podcasts, those are a thing. But peace podcasts? I didn't even know that that was a thing. But it was published about 4 days ago. And the leading one is called Peace, We Build It. And I was like, that makes sense. Peace Be Still, the daily prayer download. Peace and Parenting. These are some of the other peace-related podcasts. What I'm really grateful for is that we are at least ranked above the number 14 podcast on this listicle. That's called Thinner Peace in Menopause.
Oh, boy. It does concern me a bit that some people may like read this list and go like, oh yes, this these are podcasts that I will go to chill and to contemplate and to meditate or whatever else. And then it's just us just screaming about, you know, the, you know, whatever we're talking about, something about science fiction or whatever else, and it's not at all what they expect. It's not relaxing.
For some people that may be ASMR, you know, like you can't judge.
Yeah.
Or just there are people who put us on when they work out, you know, like if it's a 2 hour long podcast, all right, I'm going to listen to these guys jabber on about nothing for 2 hours while I put in my gains, and good on you, whoever you are. But yeah, we come in at number 6, and I thought it was pretty ironic that if this was a top 5 listing rather than a top 30 listing, we would have ended up with honorable mention.
that's fitting. That's honestly, that's so fitting. That's so perfect.
But yeah, FeedSpot recognized us as a top 30 piece podcast to listen to in 2024. Do with that information as you will.
We'll take it. We'll take it. All right. We'll take whatever recognition we can.
We got a couple of audience questions about what we should talk about this evening. And I think we'll save Matthias's for last, and we'll kind of make that like our driving the point home towards the tail end of the episode. Steven kind of made it like jokingly, but he did submit saying that we should do a full watch of X-Men 1992 and then tell us how hyped you are for X-Men 97. But considering the fact that he's in the chat here talking about how he couldn't even make it through 92 and he's just going to wait for 97, I don't think I'm going to waste my time on it. Sorry. But then he said also you should do some Argyle and maybe Lisa Frankenstein talk. Do you know anything about Lisa Frankenstein? This is the first I've heard of it.
So Lisa Frankenstein is a new movie starring Catherine Newton and, isn't it one of the dudes from Zack and Cody or something? I can't remember. Or maybe he's one of the dudes from,
Cole Sprouse.
Cole Sprouse. Yeah. Am I just completely misremembering, was he Zach or Cody?
It was Cole and Dylan Sprouse. I think Cole played Zach.
Okay, and then he also went on to do Riverdale, right?
I believe so.
Yeah, so I'm getting the chronology correct. So it's those two beautiful people, and apparently it's Lisa Frankenstein. I don't know the story. I don't know. I'm assuming I think Catherine Newton's playing Lisa Frankenstein. It's probably some kind of riff on obviously Frankenstein's monster, but it's scary, but it's cool and sexy people.
It's directed by Robin Williams's daughter.
Zelda Williams is a director? I had no idea.
Is now.
That's amazing. Okay, I'm intrigued now.
Set in the same fictional universe as Jennifer's Body.
Set in the same universe?
Lisa Swallows is a lonely teenage girl still shaken by her mother's gruesome axe murder a few months earlier. Her father, Dale, remarries a horrid and narcissistic woman named Janet, while Lisa gains a stepsister named Tammy from Janet's first marriage. Lisa spends much of her time in a local cemetery, much to the chagrin of her family. Oh my God, what? This doesn't sound like a real plot. After an unfortunate tanning bed electrocution.
Oh my good lord. Oh my God.
And a party where Lisa is drugged and sexually assaulted. She returns to the cemetery and speaks to the grave of a young Victorian man who died in 1837 from a strike of green lightning, wishing she was with him.
Oh, my good Lord.
A bolt of lightning strikes the grave after Lisa leaves the cemetery and the young man is brought back to life as a lovesick zombie.
Yeah, this sounds like I've heard of a lot of fake synopses in my day, and this sounds like one. That's insane.
Oh, her mother got axe murdered. She got electrocuted in a tanning bed. And then she falls in love with a Victorian-era zombie who got hit by green lightning.
And this is, it's funny, is this is not like her first, like Catherine Noon is not her first go around with like horror stuff. Like she did Freaky with what's his name, where she like swapped bodies with an axe murderer. And I think she's going to be, there's a movie coming out. It's called Abigail, where they like a bunch of different people. I think she's one of them, where they go into the house and they're like, oh, we're going to kidnap this kid and hold him for ransom, and you can't leave the house. And then it turns out the kid's a vampire and it kills them all.
She played the older Cassie in Quantumania.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now she's going to get electrocuted on a tanning bed.
Kind of want to see it just to experience this, because that sounds fake.
Oh my god, it sounds worse than Llamageddon. And Llamageddon is pretty bad.
From the directors of Llamageddon and Zombies comes Lisa Frankenstein.
Oh man, do you remember when there was a time for about 60 or 70 episodes in a row, we just had to find a way to make a Zombies reference in every episode?
Look, as far as I'm concerned, we're still in that run, okay?
It's been a minute.
I forget every other episode that we're supposed to make that reference.
It's been a minute.
Never going away.
Oh, man. I needed that laugh.
But, okay, another thing that he mentioned, Argyle is a movie I genuinely tried like multiple times to get to the theater, and I couldn't make it. I wanted to see Argyle, and look, I still might, because it's got a great cast, and genuinely it was on my top five most anticipated movies of this year. So like I'm game. I heard pretty good things about it, and so I might end up just catching it on a streaming service whenever it hits that. But I did hear pretty good things. I also heard some bad things, so I don't know.
Yeah, Mondo said that he saw it in theaters kind of on a whim. He just wanted to go to a movie, and it looked like the most interesting out of the options that were available. And he said it was a good film, but I think he also said that in his opinion, it would not have hurt anything if he had caught it at home on a streamer instead.
Yeah. And yeah, it's like I watched Bullet Train. That was a movie that came out a year or so or more ago. Brad Pitt movie and a bunch of other people. But like I wanted to see it in the theater, but then I ended up watching it at home. I'm like, yeah, this is fine. It's a fine movie. Like if you got nothing else to watch, it's a fun movie to watch. You don't have to pay money for it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's kind of where I'm coming from. Like, I already pay a lot for streamers, and it's going to end up on a streamer eventually. I just don't know if it's worth the investment of my time to go out and see it in a theater when it's going to be on my 70-inch screen, in like a month or so, maybe less.
Yeah, if it's a superhero flick, if it's something big, like, yeah, you want to see that on a big screen maybe, but... some of them anyway. Maybe not Madam Web. That's a whole other story.
Oh, Lord.
But, yeah.
That's another movie that IGN gave a 1 out of 10 rating to. I saw a clip where the bad guy dies. He literally jumps in front of the ambulance and then gets crushed by it.
I've heard some stories about that one.
Like what the hell were you expecting was going to happen? Like, I just... None of it makes any sense. And I don't know what Sony's doing, man. I really don't get it.
Nobody does. Nobody knows what Sony's doing. I don't think Sony doesn't know what they're doing. That's clear. Mm-hmm. It's pretty obvious.
It's one of those things where it's a movie and it exists and it makes Morbius look like an Academy Award winner now.
Yeah, it's amazing. And then they like the meme going around of like the screenwriters that brought you all these other flops. It's just like how like that alone should like encourage all the rest of it. Just like don't like if you think what you're mm-hmm. doing sucks, just do it. Don't worry about it, because these people they keep writing movies that suck and they keep getting jobs. So like just write that script, write that song, whatever you're working on, just do it and be proud of it, even if it sucks.
Yeah, you never know. You might make the next Lisa Frankenstein.
You never know. I mean, that's the thing, though, today is it's like it has to be ridiculous. It either has to be good or it has to be just absurd to get attention. Like we got this is the culture that produced Cocaine Bear. So,
hey. Cocaine Bear was excellent.
I agree, actually. I agree.
Cocaine Bear is like a modern day Stand By Me. It's one of those.
I don't know that far.
It's one of those crucible kid adventure comedies where it's okay if the kid cusses and it's okay if things get out of hand, because that's what the movie is supposed to be.
For the record, don't show your kid Cocaine Bear, okay? For multiple reasons. Don't do that. Bad idea.
Well, but I mean, like. So in Stand By Me, the kids in the movie cuss. Like they say a whole bunch of
it's like Stranger Things.
Like bad words, yeah. And I see elements of like those coming of age adventure stories that include kids cussing in Cocaine Bear. So
well, but, I mean, I'm not so sensitive to these. And I think, you know, sometimes there's merit in letting your kids experience some cultured language. Sometimes, but yeah, sometimes you gotta be careful.
I mean, it's not so bad when it's like one or two words that get spoken in really dramatic moments, like in Braveheart or something like that. But it's a little bit different when there's a kid who's running from a bear that is all hyped up on cocaine, and he's like, "Yeah, this bear was effed." They're like,
oh yeah, those kids, those are great actor kids, man. Those were the highlight of that movie.
They were, they really were. I hope they get more roles. But anyways, Jesse submitted a question as well. He says, is there a series, movie, TV, gaming you're hoping to hear a sequel announcement for this year that has yet to be announced?
Firefly. I'm keep saying until
hoping to hear. Yeah, I guess that word is ambiguous enough that we could say something like that. That's true.
Holding out hope. No, seriously. I don't know. I mean, I feel like I'm covered on the Star Wars. I don't want to say something Star Wars, even though there's a lot of Star Wars things I would like to get sequels to. I really liked Willow, the series. Like I became a Willow fan last year. Like I got all in on it. Like but now not only is it not getting a sequel, like they won't even put it on Disney Plus or put it anywhere you can watch it. So like, that's a whole other situation.
I would probably say I want to see more Prodigy. You know, they announced that season one's going to Netflix, but I want it to be more than that. So Star Trek Prodigy would probably be my safe answer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I also know that it's only a matter of time before Steven chimes in the chat and talks about Dark Crystal, Age of Resistance, getting another season. I liked Dark Crystal. I did. I liked Age of Resistance. I liked where it was going. I liked the characters that they had. But I also understand why it didn't get a second season. So.
Yeah, it's much like Willow. It's like this legacy. We're legacy sequel, but we're not going to do a sequel. We're going to do a series and we're going to expand it, like that sort of thing that has, I mean, produced middling results across the board. But I think all in all, produce some really great content for people who like that kind of stuff.
Yeah, Steven's in the chat going, wasn't season two of Prodigy confirmed? It probably was. I don't remember exactly what was announced when they said that Netflix picked it up. I feel like they said that season two is in development, maybe. But there hasn't been like a release date for it or anything like that. So
kind of a bit light on Star Trek news now. I mean, Star Trek to anticipate, because Picard's done. Discovery mm-hmm. will soon be done.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, Strange New Worlds is going, but who knows how long, much longer that'll go on. Like,
they're going to do this. They're going to do the Section 31 movie. The Section 31 movie's being worked on. And I'm pretty sure another season of Lower Decks is in the works. They just haven't.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I forgot about Lower Decks. That is thanks. And then they're doing a prequel series, a prequel to the Kelvin movies. I don't know.
I don't know. I haven't heard much about that, but you're
prequel,
right.
Do the prequel.
The golden era of Star Trek is kind of diminishing. And it's not a bad thing, because Strange New Worlds is excellent. I can't wait for another season of that.
Well, but, you know, I hope they don't do what like a lot of franchises do. It's like, we need to put everything out. It's like, no, just let it go. Like, you know, when you have an idea, when something's come up, like, do it. Like, but don't try to like, we need 8 Star Trek series per year. Like, yeah, it was great to have, you know, Lower Decks and Discovery and Picard and all the stuff on at the same time. But, you know, let it simmer and then bring it back in full force in, you know, a few years when, you know, things we've got a lot to look forward to already. It's Strange New Worlds and Lower Decks is enough right now.
Well, that's going to have to be. But I think I would also say, just as a fan of this franchise, Jesse, I would be on board with pretty much any kind of announcement about anything from Game of Thrones. There's been talk about a spinoff miniseries about Sir Duncan the Tall, which I'm intrigued by. They're also talking about doing Aegon's Conquest, which is a prequel to House of the Dragon, which is a prequel to Game of Thrones. So they just keep going further and further back in time. I would love to see what they do next. Like, what do they do after Game of Thrones? And, you know, what comes next? And I think that'll happen in the form of the Jon Snow series, but that's not happening for a few years. And so I'm pretty much down for anything that's from the Game of Thrones world if they were to announce it. I would be on board. And I don't know how many other people would be. I feel like a few, but I don't know how many of them are listeners to this show. I would be on board with the announcement of an animated series that is dark and gritty, kind of like Castlevania. You know, give me something that is action-packed, that's more adult-oriented, but it just happens to be animated. If they did something Game of Thrones with the vibe of something like Castlevania Nocturne, that would be a really cool sweet spot to kind of give you some filler Thrones TV while you're working on the live action stuff.
Yeah, it's fascinating. As someone who is a very casual observer of the whole Thrones franchise, I was just like, you know, obviously after the end of Game of Thrones, it was a lot of pushback, a lot of backlash, a lot of like ill right. will towards that. And a lot of people were like, oh, is Game of Thrones just done? Whatever. And I think House of the Dragon pretty well proved like that. No, that franchise is still very much like people are very much into that and want to see more of that. And that's good.
Oh, yeah.
So it's not going anywhere. It'll be curious to see how they expand it in certain ways. Like, you know, like it's obviously very much an adult franchise. It's not it's not in the same vein as Star Trek, Star Wars or Marvel. It's not a big franchise like that, but it's still huge and they could do anything. And as we've noted, animation is not just for kids. So, you know, doing something interesting like that, I think would be very, very interesting.
Yeah. And I'm part of a YouTube channel that talks about all things Game of Thrones. So if you are interested in that franchise, then go follow The Legacy of Westeros on YouTube. Sean and Ryan and I are kind of the three main content creators over there. But anytime any type of Game of Thrones related news pops up, we try to create some kind of video content reaction, what have you. So, yeah, go have a look-see over there for anything Thrones related, and then you know where to go for things that are Star Wars related. There's a whole freaking network of it now.
I heard about that.
It's not just an underground anymore. It's an underground network, which is pretty cool.
Apparently.
Matthias says you could talk about The Batch. That's one of the comments from when we prompted people during the request segment.
It's crazy that that was the one thing that I watched today and I almost forgot about it.
Dude, I did too. I watched it right before we started recording. I watched that new fourth episode. So we got three episodes that dropped all at once, and then we got the fourth episode at the time of this recording. And here's the thing. Number one, I think I have a much deeper appreciation for Tantus in this season. It's a secret base that has a ton of mystery and intrigue, and Hemlock is the perfect guy to run a place full of mystery and intrigue like that. So I love Tantus, I love Hemlock, and I love what the Kyners are doing with the music, bro. Those last 2 minutes of music in episode 4, they did not have to go that hard, but they freaking did anyway.
It is incredible. The music, I mean, everything about this show, it is like it's standing on the shoulders of giants. Obviously, it's building on what Clone Wars established, and we always were continually amazed. Like this show looks amazing, it sounds amazing, the voice acting is amazing, music's amazing, and it's just like it's the Bad Batch is just season 10 of Clone Wars now. Like it's crazy. It's the music is incredible. That last moment, won't spoil it. We won't get into spoilers right now. We're still going to save for kind of a full discussion after we've seen all the episodes. We'll catch that at a later date. But right now, I'm feeling really good about the season. I'm liking what I've said so far. Yes, I shed some tears in that last episode. If you've seen episode 4, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And I like that the story is moving forward pretty quickly. It's not – I expected to be some through lines in the show. I'm just like, yeah, we got to get this character out of this place and rescue this person. And kind of doing it all here. The first thing. So I'm like, okay, what is the rest of the season going to be? What's going on here? Because things are moving fast and a lot's happened already. And we're in a place that I didn't expect us to be. So, ultimately it's been a real fun ride. And, also, hell of a cliffhanger this week. It's funny. People were kept saying like, "Oh, it's a cliffhanger." I'm just like, what's gonna happen? And when it got to the end, I'm like, "Okay, that is a cliffhanger, not a cliffhanger I was expecting." Because really, right. it's just like there's some stuff that's gotta happen. Okay, it's not like nobody's gonna die. It's not a dire strait. It's just like there's tension. There's tension. It's palpable, and people got to say some things because they got to get some stuff off their chests.
It's what I would like to call an emotional cliffhanger.
Oh, hell yes.
Well, there's the physical cliffhangers, like what the end of Strange New World season 2 was. There's a big battle going on. Yeah. They're asking Those Pike what his orders are, and you're just sitting there going, "No, you can't stop there." Those are physical cliffhangers. There is something physically happening. There's an action sequence. There's a big decision. There's something physical that is taking place in those types of cliffhangers. Episode 4 was more of an emotional cliffhanger where you're not sure what's going to happen next and you're not going to find out until the next episode. But like you said, the stakes are not deadly, but you know that something is about to go down next. And that's going to be like the very first thing of episode 5. And I can't wait for that.
Yeah, I think that's I think people look down on animation. They look down on Star Wars and itself. It's just like, oh, it's all explosions and action and all this kind of stuff. Like I do love an action sequence. I love a good lightsaber duel. I love it when characters have figurative and literal conflict. But it's, ultimately, I think the scenes that have stood out to me the most, whether it's live action, animation, whatever else in modern Star Wars, has been just conversations between people or just sometimes people talking. Sometimes when someone wants to give a big speech, if you're Luthen Rail or you're Kino Loy in Andor and you wanted to give a big speech, I eat that crap up, okay? And in this show, just like, I want to see those two characters hash it out. There's stuff that needs to be said.
Yep.
And, you know, that kind of stuff, you can't put a price on it. It is incredible. So, yeah, next episode is going to be wild. And it seems to be we're on our way to getting the band back together. So I'm very much, very much excited.
Can we talk just a little bit about how heavy the Emperor's presence is in this season?
Oh, and Ian McDiarmid, man.
McDiarmid being voice. Back is so great. I'm so glad that they were able to get him. I know that they had Ian Abercrombie for a while, and then I think the voice went to Tim Curry at one point.
Tim Curry for tail end of season 7, yeah.
Yeah, and so, like, it's been kind of a revolving door the last couple of seasons, but to have the man himself voicing the man himself and establishing such a powerful and commanding presence, and again, the Kiners with the music, my God, it was awesome. But, like, there's a certain aura about him that translates so well to the animated screen. Like, way more than I was expecting. You don't see much of the Emperor in the Clone Wars. Like, obviously, he comes out to confront Savage and Maul. Right. And then he'll be, like, behind the scenes in, like, a hologram or something every now and then. But this is him in all of his glory with all of the troopers coming out to welcome him on the loading dock. Like, this is peak Emperor Palpatine. And it's so interesting to watch, even on an animated front, to see what kind of respect he commands wherever he goes.
Yeah, I love the use of Palpatine, because there's so much discourse, there's so much talk about cameos and fan service, and when characters should and shouldn't show up, and you have few characters that are bigger in Star Wars than Palpatine and are more important in Star Wars than Palpatine, and someone who is the through line through literally the entire saga. And I like that they used him in this show. And this is no spoiler, because it's literally in the trailer. I'm just like, he's not there for very long. He's only there for one episode, but the presence that he has is so incredible and so thought provoking. And you're left with like, okay, this is we're reminded of the stakes. We're reminded that, you know, even though the characters that we're dealing with here, they're not the Skywalkers, they're not going to save the galaxy in a few years, but they're still important, and they're facing, everyone has the same enemy, okay? Good old Sheev, he's a thorn in everybody's side, okay? And he's screwing with the clones right now, and they have to deal with him right now. And I love that it just punctuates that this is what we're dealing with. This is what Omega and Hunter and Wrecker, this is the enemy. And yeah, it's just great to have that. I think it's a really, out of all the cameos, there's a ton of cameos, and you debate on, is this even a cameo? But ultimately, just a famous Star Wars character that everyone knows showing up in a show that's not their show, this is a good one, because it highlights the gravity of the situation.
Yeah. Yep, I agree. I would agree. I'm trying to think. There were two other talking points that I wanted to have. I guess the first one I'll focus on is the one that was brought up in our other group chat that we're a part of, the Jurassic Boys group chat, when we try to have our Jurassic Park discussions. Shout out to the Jurassic Boys. They mentioned that there was like a park-like reference that took place here in this fourth episode. I don't think it's that much of a spoiler to say that we saw a lot more wildlife running free in this episode than we normally see in any kind of Star Wars, let alone animated.
It's interesting that this is not a spoiler, because you won't know it until you see it, but you will absolutely get it when you see it, especially if you've seen the movie. There is straight up a reference to The Lost World, Jurassic Park, in the fourth episode of The Bad Batch Season 3. And, you know, it's one of these things where, like, there's a lot of Jurassic Park references in a lot of different movies, but usually they don't reference The Lost World. Well, usually okay. That's not the movie they generally go to.
The Lost World gets referenced. I would say the opening sequence of the first Jurassic Park movie gets referenced with like squealing noises and then sticking electro staves into the box. That's what they do to the raptor in the very first opening sequence.
That too.
And then there's a scene that actually reminds me of Fallen Kingdom quite a bit. Towards the end of Fallen Kingdom, there's a sequence in there that seems reminiscent of it too.
Well, and then there's the very first scene of this season where there's a shuttle crash into a jungle, and then they get out and they're like, oh, there's creatures. I'm like, okay, this is Jurassic Park 3.
Yep. So there's definitely inspirations that's coming from a very popular franchise. And it just makes me excited for the Camp Cretaceous sequel. You know, time to get back into the saddle and watch Darius do his thing, which is going to be really cool. I'm excited for that.
That's a sequel that I can't believe is happening. Like, there's certain things that you're like, oh, I really like that thing. I wish they would do this adjacent to it. They did it. Mm-hmm. They're doing it. I'm just like, that's unbelievable. Like, it was so much fun doing Camp Cretaceous and watching that show. And yeah, I'm glad to see it's continuing.
We'll have to get the Jurassic Boys back together for another discussion once that show finally airs.
Yeah, I cannot wait.
Okay, the other Bad Batch related question that I want to ask you before we move on to our last segment tonight. What do you make? And this is a theory that is not super widespread, but it's one that I found interesting. We don't really exactly know the fates of the entire Bad Batch yet. Maybe it'll get determined by the end of this third season. But we as of now, as of the time of this recording, as of February 28th, 2024, we don't know their fates.
Right.
But there is a little bit of a theory going around that maybe some of them find a way to survive. There was a post that might have been made on the Underworld, or it may have been a subsequent similar Star Wars post that I saw, where the question was posed, who do you most want to see in the Mandalorian and Grogu movie? And there were several comments, not just one. There were several comments that said Omega.
Yeah. I really do. I like that theory because I feel like it's totally within the realm of possibilities for Star Wars. Star Wars is, I mean, it's like I always say, when Luke Skywalker showed up at the end of Mandalorian season 2, that's when we knew like nothing is impossible. That the most ridiculous, the most outlandish thing that no one ever thought would happen, that we all said there's no way they would ever do this, it happened. So no holds barred anymore. Right. Anything can happen. And I think it would, and it also would be super easy. It would be super easy because she's a kid now. And then in Mandalorian Grogu, she's probably in her 30s, 40s, I don't know. Like, it would be very easy. Just cast a Maori actress to do the part, and then you have this thing, and then you introduce her as a new character. She's a clone, and you know, we've seen Boba Fett. We know that, you know, things, and maybe that's how you tie it in, is that, you know, we don't know what kind of relationship Boba Fett and her have, if they have one at all. But Daniel Logan is back this season playing a different character. People are theorizing, well, if they got Daniel Logan to play a random clone, why wouldn't they get him to voice Boba Fett? And Boba Fett's been name dropped at least once in Bad Batch. They're just like, okay, what are you doing here? The original clone, where is he? Where what's he doing these days?
Yeah, that is a very worthwhile question. I'm really curious to see where all of it ends up, but I am very curious now that there are some developments with Omega's character and her abilities that make me wonder if, quite by accident, she could end up becoming the most important person in the galaxy.
There's talk of M counts and blood and all kinds of stuff that has me thinking, you know, where is this going? You know, are they there? Obviously, I think they're wanting us to think a certain way. I think mm-hmm. they definitely want us to believe a certain thing is happening and that it's going a certain direction. My only question is, like, is this really where it's going, or is this a red herring to throw us off the scent of something else? I don't know.
Yeah. There's still plenty of episodes for us to sort all of that out. And is it okay yet for me to tell people to mark their calendars, or do we need to wait a little bit for that?
I mean, it's no secret. So if you want to tell people, that's perfectly fine. That's up to you.
Okay. I didn't know how far in advance that type of stuff was public information, and I didn't want to step on anybody's toes.
It can be public information now if you want it to be.
I'm just going to say it to the two people that are tuning in live and whoever else wants to potentially tune in. I'm just going to say, folks, mark your calendars for April 18th. That's all I'm going to say right now. But if you are capable of putting 2 + 2 together, you should know what that means. But mark your calendars for April 18th. That's all I'm going to say.
It's going to be good. It's going to be good.
One last question that shifts from Star Wars to Star Trek, and then we'll head over to the barbecue element. George is in the chat. Shout out, George. I appreciate you tuning in during my baseball stuff last week. Man, we've got more games tomorrow, so if you've got nothing going on, would appreciate seeing you there again. He's asking about the cancellation of the Section 31 series. Do you think it could have been a good direction to go in terms of seeing the hidden nature of Starfleet and what happens to Section 31 and its implications of having an organization like it in the galaxy? Steven makes a good point that it kind of hinged on Michelle Yeoh's availability, and it's good that she's at least doing the movie. But I'm kind of on the same page as Steven that I definitely would have enjoyed seeing a series. But Michelle Yeoh is a freaking Oscar winner now. She's in high demand. And yeah. So the fact that we're getting her for a movie is probably a blessing in and of itself. So if they were able to make a 31 series about maybe one of her co-stars, that was like, this is the pilot, this movie is the pilot, and the series will not have her for whatever reason that gets explained in the movie, then I could see them doing a series that dives deeper into it. But I'm just going to count my blessings that we're getting anything, period, because Michelle Yeoh is in very high demand right now.
Yeah, it's not all that different from Pedro Pascal and The Mandalorian. It's like,
right.
Is he gonna be in The Mandalorian Grogu? Well, it depends on if he's available, and he's being cast in literally every other franchise and movie in existence, and so probably not.
Yeah, he's. And what's cool is he acknowledges that he got his start on Game of Thrones and gives props to them when possible, but he's definitely grown beyond that character of Oberyn Martell and is so much more now. So I'm glad for them, but I'm also glad for the different types of content that we're getting.
Yeah, that's definitely and that's another thing that happened. Fantastic Four is we got the
full
cast.
That's a thing.
That's a thing that just recently happened on Valentine's Day. It's very exciting.
That's a thing. Yeah, I am excited to see that it's going to be like a timepiece.
That seems to be the case.
I like that idea, because not the Marvels, Captain Marvel tried to be a timepiece, but I don't think it went far back enough. I think in order for it to feel retro, you really need to take it further back than the 90s, and that's what this movie's going to do. So as bummed as I am that it's not John Krasinski, I am still pretty excited at what this four is going to bring to the table. Now I need to go watch The Bear so that I can see So I can see the guy who plays the Thing. I can't remember his name.
Eben Moss Bacharach, I believe, is how you pronounce his name. He was in Andor. He's in the Bear. He's been in everything.
And apparently, the character of the Thing is Jewish, like in the comics. And yeah,
that's what I heard.
Moss Bacharach is Jewish, which is interesting.
So I think he is the actually first Jewish actor to play the character. So that's pretty cool. Also, Sue Storm, created by Jack Kirby, played by Vanessa Kirby.
Any relation? I'm guessing maybe.
I'm guessing not. I mean, it's possible. I mean, I guess most of us are related in some way or form, probably. So who knows? But I imagine there's a lot of Kirby's out there. But she's great. I mean, come on. She's I'm very, very excited to see what she can do.
Oh, IMDb says no. Okay. Sorry. Got y'all's hopes up for nothing. Sorry.
You know, weirdly, as much as I love Pedro, I'm actually not completely sold on him as Mr. Fantastic yet. That said, I am sitting here like, I know he's going to kill it. I know he's going to be great. I know the fact that they picked him, he's going to do it great because Pedro is an amazing actor.
Because he's Pedro.
Because he's freaking Pedro Pascal. Of course, he's going to nail it. He nails everything. But I'm still like, there's that doubt in my mind. I'm just like, I know it's going to work, but I'm just not sure. I don't know who I would have picked. Like, John Krasinski was the favorite. We got John Krasinski, and I mean, come on. He'll probably be back at some point because multiverse shenanigans will always be a thing.
Yeah, and Marvel cuts big paychecks.
This is true. But obviously, I'm not sure. Maybe John Krasinski didn't want a 10-year, 20-movie deal, and Pedro was all about that.
10-year 20 movie or 20-year 10 movie?
Or to 20 movies, 20 years, probably something more like that.
Yeah, probably.
Because, yeah, it's these Marvel contracts, I'm sure, are pretty lengthy.
Well, they're lengthy, but they're also lucrative. So you take one with the other, I suppose.
But the one I really do think is Joseph Quinn is Johnny Storm. He's gonna nail that. That's inspired casting. He's gonna nail it.
I loved him in Stranger Things, and I think he embodies what Chris Evans tried to be. I watched the first Fantastic Four movie about a week or two ago.
Oh wow!
And it's so weird watching Captain America be an asshole, man. It's so weird.
Give it to Chris Evans. He can play against type. Like, you know, he has been typecast as Captain America. But, man, you watch him in that movie. You watch him in Knives Out. Like, the dude can play a douche.
Yeah, he can. I loved him in Knives Out. I did not love him in Fantastic Four.
He wasn't born for that role, okay? He was not. That was he's just one of those –
That was a role, but it was not the role.
Well, you know, the whole saying, you know, you'll either die a hero or live long enough to play another hero.
I don't think that's quite how it works.
I'm pretty sure that's the exact line.
I also know that Christopher Nolan, like, did not want to include that line in his film.
I heard that he's weird about it because he didn't write it.
He didn't write it, and therefore he was going to edit it out. Somebody fought to keep it, and he was like, all right, I'll keep it, even though I don't really understand exactly what it means. And then it ends up becoming the most iconic line of his movie, and he's like, son of a bitch.
Like, that's probably the most, like, if people think of Christopher Nolan as a filmmaker and what he's directed and written, the movies he's done, out of all of them, that's probably the pinnacle of iconic. And I can understand his pain, okay? He's Christopher Nolan. He'll be all right, but I understand.
Yeah, yeah. He's getting a bunch of Oscar nominations, probably winning some with Oppenheimer. I think I think when he puts a few of those statues on his mantle, he'll get over it.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll be just fine.
Last question before we go to barbecue. Do you think Evans would return as the Torch via multiverse shenanigans, or would that cheapen his Captain America exit?
I think he's more likely to return as Johnny Storm than he is Steve Rogers. I think that would be the ultimate wrench in the gears. I'm just like, hey, Chris Evans is coming back. And I'm like, oh, yeah, Captain America. And then he's like, I fully expected it to happen in Multiverse of Madness. And they disappointed me there. But I think with Secret Wars, no holds barred. I'm also can't rule out Deadpool 3 or Deadpool and Wolverine, as it's called. A lot of shenanigans there. It's weird. They've been referencing a lot of the Fox X-Men, but not the Fantastic Four. So curious how that works out.
Mm-hmm. My answer is I think we will sooner see Nicolas Cage's Ghost Rider than we will see Chris Evans in a Marvel project.
Wow, that's. I mean, I think Chris Evans understands the gravitas that he has and the importance of that character and not wanting to ruin it. And yeah, so things. But yeah, I think Ghost Rider. Nick Cage, it seems like he'll just do anything. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think he's getting ready to do a noir Spider-Man that's based on his character that he voices in Spider-Verse. So. Like, he's involved in some Marvel projects already, but I think we could see him make an appearance in the MCU. I definitely could see that.
Yeah. No. Again, nothing is impossible. They've already done crazier things.
Yep. That's my two cents. All righty, folks. Time for the final segment of this episode. It's already getting kind of late, but we wanted to make sure that we saved enough time for this to make it like a actual segment this time instead of something that's rushed and abbreviated. So get out your hashtags and put them in the chat. There's still a couple of people out there that are listening live. And if not, then hit us up at IPC Podcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram and start using that hashtag for another edition of hashtag BBQ Watch.
Barbecue. Barbecue.
Barbecue.
Watch.
I don't care how many times I hear it. I don't get tired of that segment.
Such a classic.
That was rudimentary back in my old GarageBand days when I still had an Apple computer. When I threw all of that stuff together. And it still doesn't get hit by copyrights. I don't know how that's possible.
But. Timeless.
Hail as old as time. Song as old as rhyme. BBQ will watch. I don't know.
Nailed it.
George and Steven are in the chat with hashtag BBQ watch. I hope that everybody that's tuning in after the fact uses it as well to keep up with all of our barbecue shenanigans. Ben, I actually had barbecue for dinner tonight. Did you?
I did not. I was off today. So
I've had it more recently than the guy who works in a freaking barbecue restaurant. That's ironic. But what kind of barbecue anecdotes have you got in mind for us tonight?
Well, I was toying with the idea of doing a little series of little PSAs for people, and this wouldn't necessarily be just for barbecue, really any type of restaurant, but giving you a little behind the scenes look and also maybe a, for lack of a better term, a code of conduct in regards to when you are out and you're going out to a restaurant, what to expect, what us as the people behind the counter are thinking, what we expect from you, because there is a, unfortunately, there is a lot of misunderstandings and a lot of just general misbehavior. Look, it goes both ways. It goes both ways. I've seen plenty of videos to the contrary. You know, there's a lot of people behind the counter that don't do what they're supposed to be doing. And so things, but there's also a lot of just general misinfo and, you know, just lack of understanding in regards to what goes into a restaurant. And so I was toying with a couple of ideas. I think the one I'll talk about tonight is just a general, just like when you see a close sign, just let it go. It's just keep going, okay? Because this is a problem, and this is more just funny to me than anything. It's, I can't count the time this has happened. It's, you're closed, the lights are off, there's nobody in the parking lot, there's nobody in the building. It's just, it's clearly the place is empty, but we're in there because stuff's happening, either because we've closed earlier, because we're working on an off day or whatever else. And someone will come up to the door and they will look in the door and then they will start knocking and knocking and knocking and knocking. And you're like, okay, well, they're not going to go away. I have to go unlock the door. And so their close signs up. Everything's, we're closed, clearly closed. Open the door. Like, can I help you? What do you need? What do you need? You're knocking. What's the problem? And they're like, are you open? And I want.
Oh my God.
And I'm like, okay, do you seriously think? Do you seriously think when we're open, we keep the close sign on and we keep the door locked and we make every person that wants food come up and knock on the door and peer in the door and beg to be let in? Do you really think that? But it's just, and it's so funny because ultimately it's, I understand. Okay. Anybody knows that feeling of driving up to your favorite place, whether it be barbecue or otherwise, and they're closed. Oh my God, they're closed. It's disheartening because you got your mind, your heart set on that, your favorite meal, and just, it's not going to happen tonight. You got to wait till tomorrow. It sucks every time. I get it. But sometimes you got to accept the truth because people will just, like, they defy their own, they're not thinking too far ahead, they're not thinking about, like, the logic of the situation. They're just like, can you please tell me you're open, even though it says you're closed, even the door is locked. But then there's unfortunately more other situations where it's like, you know, before we open, it's like we're trying to get ready to open, we're trying to make sure that by 11 o'clock we're ready to go. People come up and they're knocking on the door and their things, or if we don't keep the door locked, they just come in. And then you're like,
oh, man.
And you're just like, what? And they're like asking questions or whatever. I'm just like, I only have a certain amount of time to do what I need to do to get this restaurant open. I can't sit here and talk to you. And it's just like, and it becomes very awkward sometimes. That's why most of the time we have to keep the door locked constantly and make sure nobody comes in. And the same thing happens after you close. It's like, and that's my ultimate thing. It's just like, respect the close sign. Respect the close sign. If you see a close sign, it either means they're not, it's nothing against you. It's not they're trying to keep you out. It's nothing personal. It's just that either they're trying to get ready to open or they're trying to go home. And just, if they wanted you to come in, they'd have the open sign up. So that's the long and short of it. Just like, you know, respect the close sign. You know, if the open sign's open, yeah, okay, go in. That's fine. And you know, it doesn't, you know, if you think, cause people will also come up and go, the other thing I hear is they'll come in. Sometimes when we don't have the door locked, they'll be like, your sign says you're closed. You're like,
well, there's a reason for that.
That's because we are closed. It's there. We've often talked about that. We could write a book about how many just wild and crazy things that the customers say. They don't even realize it. They don't even think about it because it's just a random thing to them. They don't get it. But it's very funny to us. We have had quite a few laughs about the things that they say. So that's my advice. Respect the close sign. Don't go knocking.
See, I think to a certain extent, I have a similar engagement, a similar circumstance that happens with my ATM work that I do.
Right.
Just today. Even somebody came out of the bathroom that was next to the ATM that I was working on. And this guy just starts striking up a conversation with me in the middle of me putting cash into this ATM.
Oh,
like,
boy.
I've got this big bundle of money in my hand. I can't tell you how much for safety reasons, but it filled up my whole hand. And I'm putting cash into the container that holds the cash. And he just comes up and tries to start having a conversation with me, talking to me about this thing he saw on the news where somebody who drives an armored car that loads ATMs at banks got robbed and the people got away with like $300,000. And I was like, ooh. I was like thinking to myself, do you really feel like you had to stop your day and like stop what you were doing and have this conversation with me right here, right now, right after you're done taking a pee-pee? Like the whole situation just felt so inappropriate and out of place. And then my other favorite one is people who will walk past me and be like, you got any free samples? Like, I get asked that a couple of times a week. And those people always laugh to themselves, thinking they were the first person who came up with that. And I feel like you guys are in a fairly similar boat where, you know, those people may not think anything of it, but it happens to you so frequently that it kind of turns into a joke almost. And
And it gets awkward because like you can't be rude to them and go like, yeah, you know, like you have to play it off as like I'm laughing at your joke, because they will get offended. And it's just like you can't make them understand. It's like, I've heard that joke before, like 8 times today. Okay, you're not funny. You think you're funny. Don't quit your day job and become comedian because you're not funny. But you can't tell them that because obviously they just don't get it.
Nope, they don't, and they never will.
Point is, I know, especially the internet teaches us that like we're all funny. We're all trying to be funny at the same time. And yes, many of you are funny, but sometimes the situation does not call for comedy. Okay, that's just the way it is.
Well, that's a very interesting way to approach a barbecue segment is barbecue restaurant etiquette. I think it's been a while since we've had that segment, but it's always good to have a reminder for those, because like George in the chat, what is wrong with people these days? I ask myself that pretty much daily these days, dude. Almost daily. But My little barbecue spiel is going to be a lot shorter. I forgot to thaw out the meat for dinner tonight.
Ooh.
And it was my fault. I got asked this morning to put it in the fridge from the freezer and thaw it out, and I didn't do it. So I decided, you know what? There is a barbecue restaurant just on the other corner, at the other side of the intersection from my office where I work. So I'll pick up some meat and we'll make baked potatoes with it, because we've got baking potatoes and we've got cheese and sour cream and things like that. So I got some diced brisket and we made barbecue baked potatoes for dinner tonight. Problem is, I bought way too much meat. I bought like, I think a whole pound when I probably only needed about a half pound. And so now we've got like this extra portion of chopped brisket that we don't really know what to do with it. So it's going to end up in a salad, or it's going to end up on some sandwiches or something in the not too distant future. But I guess my train of thought was I would rather have too much than have too little and still be hungry. So I just went ahead and bought a whole pound rather than taking my chances with a half pound. But now I know for next time.
Yep, that's interesting.
Have you ever, I'm guessing you have, like, y'all have had to weigh out portions of meat for people, and like, you see them order a half pound, and you're like, a half pound's not going to be enough. Or you see somebody order a full pound, and you're like, oh, a full pound's too much. But, like, you think it to yourself, even though you're just making a sale, but, like, low-key, you're kind of judging them a little bit about how much they just ordered.
Yeah, there is, or there is certain situations where you're just like, this person has no idea what they ordered. This person doesn't know quite what they're getting. Are certain some situations where, you know, they'll order something and like they'll be back because they didn't get enough, and sure enough, here they come.
Imagine that.
But yeah, but like, you know, if I didn't work in a restaurant, I'd be like, well, how much is a pound of pork? How much is a few ounces of pork? Like, you know, you don't really know the answers to this question until you have experience doing it. So I get the confusion. I get why people are sometimes not fully on board with the whole thing.
It happens. It happens. But I, you know, like I said, I would rather have too much than not have enough. So that was my whole train of thought, was even if I end up having too much, that's okay. We'll just make sandwiches. George asks, how much is a pound of brisket these days? It depends on the quality of the brisket and where you go to. There are some places that like really high quality premium beef will go over $30 a pound.
It can be pretty expensive these days. I know beef has kind of gone through the roof in recent months and years.
Mm-hmm. But I got mine today for just under 20 for the whole pound.
Wow.
So it was like 19 something. So okay. It wasn't top grade quality, but it was good. And it did what we needed it to do. So I'm not going to complain too terribly much. Because it was good, it was serviceable, it wasn't expensive, it was local. But yeah, depending on where you go and how high quality you're looking for, George, it can probably go anywhere from, I would say, $19 to $36 a pound.
Nice.
In some cases, it's cheaper just to smoke your own brisket.
Yeah, I mean, there's labor in it. And when you go out to a barbecue place or really any place, you know, you gotta make a profit. And if you're willing to put in the work, you can save some money.
You could. My dad has taken to smoking stuff recently, and he'll smoke vegetables, he'll smoke chicken, he'll smoke sausages, but he's really nervous because there's a lot of steps involved in the prepping of a brisket. And getting the smoke ring just right, and a whole brisket, depending on where you buy it from and when you buy it, because sometimes it'll go on sale and be really cheap, but a whole brisket can probably cost you a solid $100 plus. And if you don't do it right, then you've basically just wasted $100 plus time, plus effort, plus smoking materials, all kinds of things.
Yeah, and interestingly, we will sell at the restaurant. We will sell whole pork, like pork roasts, because people will come in and they'll be like, oh, I need like 50 sandwiches or whatever. They'll need a bunch of sandwiches. They'll need something like for like catering or whatever. Also, we can't always handle that much of a big order, or they'll need it like thing. Oh, I want the sauce on the side or whatever else. We really don't serve it like that. So we'll like say, hey, you can buy a couple of pork roasts and then you can pick it yourself. And that way you can have it, you know, and you can get the pat off the bone and you have shredded pulled pork ready to go. You can do anything with it. And you can, if you're doing it for a party, you can feed a lot of people. If you're just feeding yourself, you can eat off that thing for a month. I mean, it's great.
Man, you're making me hungry.
That's the point. Make you hungry at the end of the episode. But don't go to Wendy's. Because their prices might be different.
For crying out loud, man. I had that on the show notes, and when we were talking about Burger King, I was going to bring it up. Oh, my God. I was already mad at Wendy's for getting rid of the 4 for $4, and now the $5 biggie bag basically doesn't exist anymore. Like, if you want a quote-unquote biggie bag that has the sandwich, the fries, and the drink, and the nuggets, it's like starting at like $6 now, going up to like $7 or $8. And I'm like, that's not a value meal. That's just a meal. Like that's not a deal anymore. That's just food. And so I've been kind of avoiding them anyways, but like the idea that they would try something like what they were talking about trying in New York and the amount of backlash that they got as a result of it, it's very rare to see the Wendy's Twitter page inactive for 2 days or whatnot. But I think they knew better than to make any posts or be snide and snarky and sarcastic like they usually are. Like, they didn't say a damn thing amidst all of that backlash. And I think the CEO is finally starting to back down a little bit. But, oh my gosh, the amount of vitriol that received was ridiculous. Justifiably so. I can't believe that was something they were trying to like unveil to the public and get away with it and make it come off as if it was like a good thing. It was to your benefit. It's not. It sucks. You suck. Like, screw you, Wendy's.
Yeah, I too was already angry at Wendy's because every freaking time I go there to get a Frosty, the Frosty machine is broke. It's like McDonald's with their stupid ice cream machine. So I'm like, nah, okay, look, the Frosty is like the best thing you have and you're not making any effort to fix that machine. Screw you.
Yeah, there was just, man, you're getting me all riled up right before bedtime. How dare you?
I know. I'm sorry.
Well, what a fun way to end the night, talking about barbecue and screw you, Wendy's.
That's the title of the episode. Screw you, Wendy's.
That might as well be. That's about as concrete of a conversation topic as anything else that we talked about tonight. But it was still fun. Got a lot in a decent amount of time. We're just now eclipsing 2 hours, which is kind of par for the course. Sometimes it's closer to 2.5. But all in all, a really fun night, dude.
It was a lot of fun, and I apologize again for the wait. It literally is the end of February. I hope you guys get to listen to this in February, if not early March. Just consider it an early March episode. that's just how we roll. But it's been fun. We got a lot. We're kind of in between now. A lot of stuff to look forward to. A lot of stuff that's happened. And I'm sure by the time we talk again, so many things will have happened. We'll have watched so many things, experienced so much, and we'll have a whole another slew of stuff to talk about.
Oh, no doubt. And maybe I'll be caught up on certain things. Maybe I'll have actually seen certain things by this point. So I'm looking forward to what is still ahead here in 2024. But this was probably the closest thing to a filler episode that IPC has had in quite some time. So hopefully we'll have
filler can be good sometimes.
It can be. I'm not complaining. I didn't say I was complaining. It's just it's interesting that that we had one of those, because they are few and far between sometimes. But yeah, I think Jesse, 12 minutes ago, I'm late, but I made it. You made it just in time for us to say, screw you, Wendy, several times over.
And the one night we have an early night, we're finishing before 11 o'clock. Jesse shows up late.
Oh, man. Well, that's okay. Sorry, it'll be available on the show reel. It'll be available on the podcatchers in due time. So appreciate you joining live anyways, man. And appreciate the support for the side hustle. It starts up again tomorrow. It'll be like mid-40s, pushing 50-degree weather with like a chance of rain. So I'm going to have to wear plenty of layers for baseball season starting up again tomorrow. But I'll worry about tomorrow when tomorrow comes. Ben, aside from this stuff, what have you got going on out there in the world?
Oh, too much. You can follow me personally at Ben Hart with no E on all the socials. Yes, including Twitter. I'm glutton for punishment. I'm back on that stupid hell site, and I am tweeting occasionally. So go follow me there, if you dare. And also Star Wars Underworld, Star Wars Underworld Network, Star Wars Underworld .net, I think. We actually recently changed websites. So I think it's .net or .com. I can't remember. Just go to the one at the SWU and you'll find a link. And we do the weekly podcasts and all that kind of stuff. We're talking about the Bad Batch weekly, every week, this time. And also at Culture Slate for all things. We're doing all kinds of stuff. You get on YouTube, you get the weekly slate and the Star Wars slate, which is basically just kind of this breakdown of all the entertainment news and all the Star Wars news from the week. So one of the many things we have to offer. So go check it out.
Well, as for me, I mentioned the YouTube channel. with the Legacy of Westeros and some other things of Phantom Empire when time allows. But the main thing is Zach Arnold Productions, and we will be doing six baseball games over the span of 3 days, and then we'll do another 5 games in 3 days next week. So it'll be quite the gauntlet of baseball games, and then it'll be about 2 games a week after that moving forward, sometimes 3. So it'll level out eventually, but we're right in the thick of it, and it starts tomorrow afternoon at about 2:30. So hit that subscribe button if you haven't already over on Mixlr. Follow me at Zach the Voice. You'll see a live feed there as well. And we'll be back next month for another episode of IPC. But that is going to do it for episode 370 of the Intergalactic Peace Coalition podcast. I'm signing off before 11 this time. Damn it. For Ben Hart, I'm Zach Arnold. We'll see you all next time. But until then, good night, everyone.